Hey, we're back. I'm Michael Cohen, 1320 WILS. Well, if you've been betting against the markets the last several weeks, you've probably been paying for it, whether it's the Turkish coup attempt or these terrorist attacks. Nothing seems to stop the markets from going to record territory. So let's get back down to earth here. We're joined by Bill Tatro, economist, author, lecturer, a man who's got 40 years of radio experience himself. Find him at BillTatro.com. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Michael, always a pleasure.
Now, how do you make sense of the markets being so resilient right now?
Well, I think when you take a look at who the players are in the system, and you take a look that over the last, 15, 16, 17 weeks, you've seen up into the last, we'll say, 10 days, you've seen net retail on Wall Street. I'm talking about mom and dad have been basically pulling out of mutual funds. They've been taking their money out of the market. So wait a minute, what's pushing the market continually higher? Well, you got two factors. One is the corporate buyback, and that has been, going on for the last couple of years. Forget about putting money into the building up of your business. The whole idea is simply continue to support your stock in the market. Continue to buy back shares, whether you're Apple, whether you're Caterpillar, whoever you are out there. That's the whole thing. The second thing is central banks from around the world, whether you're the Kuroda in Japan or whether you're Mario Draghi, who said whatever it takes, he said it again today, or whether you're on Eccles Street in Washington, you're the Federal Reserve. They have been continued to be a supporter and a buyer of the market.
Now, I thought the professionals, though, buy at the bottom. Who's buying up here? I mean, we're in record territories now, and we still see buyers. How's that happening?
Well, that's where the buyers are. That's what I just said. It's the corporations are buying back their own stock to continue to support. And every time you get a dip down in the market, you'll look at the S&P, you'll look at the futures. Around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, here we go. The central banks come in at the same time every single day. But now, here's the danger, in my opinion. You're now starting to see mom and dad saying, I miss this market. I've got to get in. I've got to start putting money in there. And it's fascinating because, as you know, I write for Town Hall, both on the political side and the financial side. Mm-hmm. And I just completed, as we have been talking, I completed, and there will be a column coming out in the next few days about risk-reward. And when you take a look at risk-reward, sometimes people have a tendency of just getting away from that. They just say, I want to chase. I want to get in. I want to jump in. And that becomes a major danger. Let's take a look at the VIX. The VIX is a measure of volatility. And after Brexit, we watched the VIX, basically I think it was the day after the Brexit vote in London, we watched the VIX jump up to 27. Okay, now were the professionals jumping in there at the VIX at 27? No, but a lot of individuals say, oh, it's time to get in. The problem is over the next 17 trading days, 15 out of 17 of them, the VIX fell. And yesterday, it was the fastest collapse in the last 15 days, the fastest collapse in VIX's 26-year history.
So tell me, yesterday
at 11.4.
When the VIX is down, what does that really mean then?
That means that the risk is on. It's saying that I want to get into this market. It's time to jump in. It's time to, this is what people are looking. They're saying, I don't care about the risk. I don't care about the volatility. I'm just going to get in there. Okay. That's when people should be looking. And like I said, the column I wrote in Risk and Reward, you have a VIX down at 11.4. You have the VIX up at 27. Would you rather be a buyer of the VIX at 27 or a buyer of the VIX at 11.4? And that seems to be the range it's been running in.
You're saying, though, you can actually trade the VIX in a sense? Is the VIX number
so? Yes.
I did not know that. Okay.
I think that's a speculation. Because remember, we're not talking about investment here. That's one of the big things I've been a big proponent of for years and years. Don't get confused. Listeners, talk show host, myself also, don't get confused on an investment versus speculation. Speculation is a trade. You're going to buy the VIX because you think that a week from now or 2 weeks from now,
right,
it's going to be
up
more than it is today.
Let me ask you this. With the stocks where they are now, let's say if you look at the Dow stocks, mm-hmm. would you be thinking about selling if you had big positions? If, let's say you want to get out by the end of the year out of a position. Would now be a good time to get out?
Let me give you a quick answer to that is what Bernard Baruch said back in the 20s. And that was he never got in the first 20% of the move up. He never was in for the last 20% of the, the first 20% up. And he was never in for that last 20%. He always said he got in too late and he always got out too soon. He got the 60% meet in the middle. If it were me, I would be gradually phasing myself out of this thing, like right now in the next week or so. Mm-hmm. And I would also be looking at those things that have moved so dramatically up that they have more downside than they have upside, which means you'd be looking to short them.
Why? I mean, we're in the middle of July. Why are we suddenly, in your view, in record territory in this time of the year?
Because the central banks, and I come back to that, this is, if we're looking at fundamentals, if we're looking at things like that, you have to say, oh, it's the middle of the year, and it'll keep going on like that. That's all aside. It's the central banks of the world who have got to keep this thing going. They've got to keep it hot. I heard that yesterday, the most ludicrous reason that they're now saying, bulls are saying, well, the market's got to go higher. Look at bonds in the world. How many trillions of dollars of bonds are in negative interest rates. And if you look at the dividends of the S&P 500 or the Dow 30, you're looking at about a 2.4% dividend. Mm-hmm. So the bulls are saying, well, people should be buying stocks for the dividends. Okay, now wait a minute. Then why are you buying bonds? Well, they should be buying bonds because interest rates are going to keep going more and more negative. Mm-hmm. So let's get this straight. You're buying bonds for capital gains, and you're buying stock for the dividends or the interest or the income. Is that correct? Yeah, well, that's just the opposite of what I learned for 40 years. You buy stocks for capital growth. You buy bonds for the income. But we flipped it. Mm. At some point in time, that flip is going to go the other way, which means that bond prices are going to go down, which means their interest rates will go up, and you will have stock prices that will go down. And so this is where money will start to flip over there.
Talking to Bill Tatro, economist, author. He's a columnist at townhall.com and also BillTatro.com. Some people are now saying Dow 20,000. We're going to get there. Do you think so?
It's possible. I would put nothing by the central bank. I would put nothing by them. And you look, as long as those interest rates stay low, corporations can go out and borrow tremendous amounts of money, not to enhance their corporation. Look at Intel. Intel just announced in the first quarter, they're going to let 7,000 people go. But they're turning around and borrowing money to what? To improve their business? No. To increase their advertising and their product sale? No. To buy back shares. That is the mantra, has been since 2014, all through 15, all through 16. You couple that with central bank buying, this market could go to 25,000.
Okay, so
it could do anything.
Then what is it, in your view, that could really turn things downward?
I don't know what the straw is that breaks the camel's back. One would have thought maybe it's Turkey. Maybe that particular situation that happened there because it was now. Maybe it's the election of Donald Trump as president, or maybe the election of Hillary Clinton. Maybe it's something that's going on in the South China Sea where we continue to come into conflict with the Air Force of China. I don't know what it will be, but it will certainly be some straw that will break that camel's back because trees do not grow to the sky forever.
So if it's these corporations and central banks that are pushing the price higher, how do you imagine them somehow being rattled and going on a selling spree, or how would that work?
Well, remember, one of the things that happens is that when you are buying back your bonds, whether in Europe or wherever it is, that then is making your currency be devalued. We're now getting a currency war. When Japan went negative with their interest rates, mm-hmm. they thought something would happen. I mean, Kuroda and the rest of these guys thought, well, something's going to happen. Our our yen will get, it won't continue to devalue. Of course it will continue. Any economist, anybody worth a salt will tell you, you continue to buy back, you continue to monetize debt, you are going to continue to devalue your currency. Mm-hmm. When you devalue your currency, it creates a major problem for your corporations or your businesses. They have to pay back in cheaper dollars. They have loans. They're buying things. Their product is cheaper in the world, but their product is more expensive at home. It's just economics 101. Now, you have a race to the bottom for whose can devalue more, quicker, faster. And as that happens, there'll be more unemployment. There'll be more nationalism. Mm-hmm. There'll be more of all the things that were happening. And you say, what happens? I don't know. Is it another 9/11 in the United States? Is it another five police officers being shot? I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we are spinning faster and faster through this particular crisis.
Let me ask you this, Bill, because I know you've been very concerned about the real state of the markets. And am I right to say you've mostly been out of the markets recently?
Well, it depends upon how one calls it. I mean, mm-hmm. if you take a look at it, I've been in particular short areas. Mm-hmm. I have been in the dollar. I've been in the dollar and in treasuries over the last 3-4 years. Thank you very much. But interest rates, as they go negative, mm-hmm. means bond prices go higher.
Tell me this, though. For those that have been anticipating a downturn in the markets, we've talked to economic experts that say, look, it's coming, some kind of collapse of some sort. What do you say when you see these kinds of, such a strong bull market and all these negative people being proved wrong? What do you say to them?
Well, let me just answer that this way, because I get that question a lot. Let's say that you listen to the weather forecast and it says it's going to rain this afternoon. And so you carry your umbrella and it doesn't rain. So the next day you look at the weather forecast, 60% chance of rain, 70% chance of rain, and you say, well, I'm going to carry my umbrella again.
Yeah.
Now it's the fourth or fifth day, and you hear the weather forecast, and you look at everything, and you say, today I'm not going to carry my umbrella. Okay. And it rains. Now, what I mean by that is, I don't know when you get a crack. 1929, you look at the market going on forever and ever and ever. You look at 1987, look at 2000, look at 2008. You just continue all these particular dates. You never look at these things and you say, okay, are we closer, would one say closer to the top mm-hmm. or closer to the bottom?
Were you shocked, though, with the turnaround after the Brexit drop? Did that shock you, what happened to the markets right at that point?
No. Not at all. Okay. You mean that it dropped nothing in the United States, but around the world.
Well, that we had
that it came down and came up big.
Yeah, that we suddenly. I mean, from dropping to suddenly going into record territories, that kind of whipsaw.
No.
Uh-huh.
No, it didn't. It didn't, and the reason it didn't is the fact that, and I had said to people who subscribed to me, I said when the VIX got to 27, I said actually got to 24, 25. I said it might be time to take a profit, and you might want to take a look at going the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, it doesn't shock, because when you're looking at these turnarounds and these things, first of all, you don't want to play with all your cash, with all your money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to do that, my grandfather was in the business for 57 years. His best friend, he was friends with probably, in my opinion, the greatest trader of all time. Grandpa was on Wall Street with Jesse Livermore. Livermore made $107 million October 29th, 1929. He was short the market. And he had particular trading rules and things like that. Never averaged down, etc. But I think something very huge is coming on the downside. I'm not alone. I mean, I'm not the only one. You look at the individuals out there, George Soros, and some of the others are saying
right,
the same thing.
He bet against the S&P, but he must be feeling some pain right now, I'm guessing.
I'm sure, but that's a heck of a pain, isn't it? I mean, out of his $30 billion, that he's down $2
billion. Is that how much he's down right now, about $2 billion, do we know?
No, he's down fairly significantly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's down there. But the bottom line is, you don't know how much he's committed in that particular position. And when I say Livermore, I would never, if I said, okay, I want to take a pilot position, as an example, Michael. Let's say that I want to own 10,000 shares of the VIX. Okay? It's at 7, so let's say 1,000 shares. I want to own 1,000 shares of the VIX. I want a commitment of $7,000. I would never put $7,000 in. I would buy 20%. I would buy $1,400 worth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I buy 200 shares of the VIX. If the VIX continues dropping more than 10%, I'm wrong. Yeah. I get out. If the VIX starts to turn and make its upswing and starts to move higher, then I'll add more.
You add on the
upswing. That's a trading strategy. That was Livermore's strategy. But I don't think right now it's time to buy that VIX as far as a major commitment. You might put a little bit in, okay, to start, maybe to stick your toe in a little bit. If it starts to go the other way, you're stopped out. You have no big loss. But that's the way I've always traded, and it's always been very successful.
That's a volatility index. I'm guessing a lot of people that don't trade regularly, they may not know that. Do you typically trade the VIX? Is that something you're into? Or?
Yeah, I like that because it's again, I deal in speculation. And speculation is, an investment is like buying something, and what you don't want is to have your speculative investment. Excuse me, your speculation turn into an investment. An investment is something I hold on to for years to come because it's going to, I think, over the long term, it's going to do this, this, and this, and this. Speculation or the trade is a week from now or 2 weeks from now or a month from now, I want it to be higher than it is today. And that is where I look at the VIX. I would be looking at oil right now. I would, and not as a long play, as a short play. I would be looking at the junk bond. The junk bond market this summer has probably been a bigger performer than the stock market. It's crazy. You look at junk bonds. We were several months ago looking at it as a dire place to be, and all of a sudden money started flowing into the junk bond arena like nobody's going to go under. That's gone. Too much risk and very little reward.
Oh, on that end too, you're saying they're coming down.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Huh. Sounds like a time, a potentially exciting time right now as we sit at these very high levels.
I think worldwide, not just with the financials, the economics, the political, we're living in a time period that is maybe unprecedented. You take a look at where the interest rates are. You take a look at the indebtedness that we have. Think about it. Could you have gotten a bet a couple of years ago that it would be Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump? Mm. I think you could get that bet. I think the odds in Vegas would have been tremendous.
That would have been unpredictable. Bill Tatro, economist, author, lecturer. You can find him at townhall.com and, of course, his own website, BillTatro.com. Bill, it's once again been very enlightening. Thank you very much.
Michael, always a pleasure.
A lot more to come. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.